Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC, and probably nobody listening right now is old enough to remember the original Chautauqua, the adult education movement. If the word conjures images of dusty lecture halls and stern religious sermons, readjust your expectations for it today. This originally 19th century movement is currently being reinvented on stage at PS 122 in a raucous production by the National Theater of the United States of America. And joining me now to talk about Chautauqua, besides the fact that it's a great word for Scrabble, three A's, three U's, as well as what lessons that they have learned about American history, and more importantly, whether it is true or not that free beer is distributed during performances, are James Stanley and Yehuda Duenas, co-founders of the National Theater of the United States of America. Yehuda also directed the current production directed the current production that we now have in the city. James plays Dick Pricey, the MC. So James, welcome. Yehuda, welcome.
Thank you. WNYC.
And let's start with a little history. What was Chautauqua or the Chautauqua movement originally?
Well, the Chautauqua movement started actually at, like, there's still the Chautauqua Institute on Lake Chautauqua, which people still go to and a lot of people know about. But it started as an adult education movement that kind of swept the country. It began as a summer camp for Sunday school teachers, and this idea of bringing lectures and education to these small rural communities across the country just spread like wildfire. And within 10 or 15 years, there were different Chautauquas being organized all around the country by local communities and regional organizations. And then eventually it was it turned into a business model. It was much more efficient to run them as circuits, and so that's kind of the story we're telling.
I learned from Wikipedia, if it's accurate, that Theodore Roosevelt once said it was the most American thing in America.
That's, yeah.
Were there certain themes originally? Was it religious themed or history themed?
It was. It started as a religious movement, but really it was about civic duty and education and, as we say in the show, the triumph of reason over impulse. They were addressing these very kind of religious communities who were, restraint was kind of a highly valued, and theatricality was really kind of eschewed. They really didn't like the makeup and the lights of big shows, and so they kept it simple.
Was it in a way a response to the growth of vaudeville and burlesque?
I think it was
at that time.
Yeah. I think it was. I think it was a bit of a reaction to that, and the country as a whole was undergoing huge changes at that time from this, essentially an agrarian, nation of small communities to a really urban manufacturing, with the Industrial Revolution sort of changing sort of the demographic makeup of the entire country.
And there's an exclamation point in the title at the end of the show after Chautauqua.
Right.
What does that connote to you?
Well, it's a one of our funders, actually, and several of the people who are presenting the show. The show is an award of the we received the Spalding Gray Award.
Storyteller, monologist.
Yes, exactly. And so there was an award created after his death by his wife Kathy Russo, and involved in the award are Vallejo Gantner from PS 122, David Sefton from UCLA Live, Phil Byther from the Walker Art Center, and there's some other people. Who else is on that? I'm not exactly sure. There's a few more people who weigh in on that. And so we received the Spalding Gray Award with a commitment to tour the show to those three venues, the Walker Arts Center, UCLA Live.
What made you think, Chautauqua would make great theater?
Well, I think it was, we're as a company, we've always been interested in kind of the history of American entertainment, and we've explored vaudeville and casino floor shows, and we built an amusement park ride into a warehouse. We built game shows and self-help seminars, and we're interested in these kind of distinctly American forms. And this was one that's really Normandy Sherwood sort of came up with the idea, and we both share a fascination in kind of late 19th century stuff. And this was really an American phenomenon. So.
And there are lectures in your production of Chautauqua, right? They're not fake lectures. you're discussing issues that you're interested in,
yeah.
And you actually have different lecturers come to different performances.
Yeah, that was one of our challenges, is we really wanted to make it a lot of it fact-based, you know, because there were things that we were, you know, fascinated with, and we thought, how can we make this information theatrical? And yeah, we have, in every venue, we have local lecturers and artists perform with us on things that they're interested in, and we try to integrate them into the show, and every night's a different show. It's a really kind of a fun challenge.
And how do you work with that on stage, with different guest lecturers coming in on different nights?
In New York, we have a different guest every night, and so they come in about an hour before the show, and we tech them through what we want them to do. And it's very simple. We have a crackerjack team of performers that can walk the guests through everything that they need to do. So the guests really just need to show up, have something prepared ahead of time, give us their slides if they want any AV presentation. And we make it very simple. Also, the structure of the show is fairly loose. We're trying to create a festival feeling in the audience. So when the lights go down, I think if something goes wrong or there's a little stumble or a fumble or something, it's part of the part of the charm of the show. It's not one of those shows where if something technically doesn't work out exactly as we had planned it, that it's going to seem like some weird failure or something like that.
I think one of our collaborators called it the visible seams of the show. You can really
see
everything, and we try to hide that.
I could think of another show that works if the guests just show up and have something interesting to say.
Yeah.
right? Only they have to bring their audio clips in advance instead of their slides. Fact or rumor, free 6-point craft ale is handed out during the New York production of Chautauqua.
F-A-C-T, fact. It's true.
The truthometer says yes.
Yes, yes. It's very true. We have always liked to take care of our audiences and create an environment where our audiences feel free in a certain way to engage with our show, to participate if they are so inclined. We never require it, but we try and set up an environment where it is, dialogue can flow freely between audience and performer.
And does it? I know when my producer went on Friday night, there was not audience interaction, right? There was a performance from the stage. And when I think of Chautauqua, I do think of something that's more interactive.
Yeah, I mean, it's a theatrical format, and I think actually in this space, the audiences, there's more of a wall to break down.
At PS 122?
Yeah. When we first did it, we did it at the Radio Hall, or the Collapsible Hall, which is some friends of ours have a theater company.
They have a performing garage in Williamsburg.
And it was a very, sort of hometown, homemade feel. And there was much more sort of back and forth, you know. In a formal theater, it's a little bit harder to break that wall, but there is a sort of, feeling of participation, I think, mm-hmm. within the audience.
I mean, in any venue with a performance, there's an expectation of audience to watch a show and performers to provide the entertainment or whatever it is that you're watching. And so we like to skew those in whatever way we can and subtly or not have the audiences be active participants in our shows.
It says in the program that you're creating theatrical adaptations of Malcolm Gladwell's Blink. How do you see Blink as leading to theater?
That's one of my sort of side projects. And that was exactly what was interesting to me about it. I read the book, and it sort of changed my perspective and how I engage with the world.
On a more intuitive level now rather than as rational a level?
Yeah, yeah. And I thought, wow, this would be impossible to create a theater piece out of. Why don't I try
it? Let's do it. And will people feel it?
That's what I'm working on right now, actually. Yes, people will feel it.
Is there a connection in any way to what Barack Obama does? You know, people refer to him as being professorial, either in a good sense or a bad sense, depending on the audience. But if you look at his speech on race, at his speeches on the economy, there's a sort of roving lecture circuit feel to what made Obama so famous in the first place.
Didn't Tucker Carlson say, the American people don't want a pointy-headed professor type? Didn't he say something like that? Well, we do. We like pointy-headed professors.
Did this play predate the Obama campaign in its conception?
Yeah, I mean, it's been in the works for like 2.5 years now, and we've really been kind of generating steam with it and trying it out in different variations for a number of years. But definitely, you know, that the whole zeitgeist for this, you know, there's really a lot of celebration of Obama as an intellectual, it seems, you know, in certain communities, and that's new, you know, at least in the past. You know,
there's so much been you know, so much
years,
anti-intellectualism
anyway.
In America, right? Really, for decades.
Right.
And with a name like the National Theater of the United States of America, your theater company must be getting millions from the stimulus package, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're rolling in it right now.
Is it kind of an ironic name, or do you have any attachment to the U.S. government?
Well, we have no attachment, which our lawyers were clear to point out.
Yeah.
But no, we you know, we formed, you know, 8 or 9 years ago after collaborating for a number of years, and the name came up as something that made us laugh every time we said it, because there is no such thing, and we wanted to create this impossible organization, and the work we create, we, you know, we strive for kind of the impossible.
Also, when we started making work, everyone was starting a theater company before making anything, so everyone had their nonprofit and their 501c3 and all their papers in order, but they weren't producing anything that we found that was particularly interesting. So even before the company was formed, we were just making work anonymously and never really wanting to form an official theater company. As we found out that we had to form and had to become a 501c3 in order to support ourselves and to maintain donation, you know, to get donations and stuff, and to just become, you know, take a step in becoming more official, we said, well, we have to come up with a theater name. And that was always something we never wanted to do. What are we going to be? You know, the Mystic Options Theater Company. We had no idea what, you know, it was one of Jesse's funny names. So we, you know, James said, well, why don't we just be the National Theater of the United States of America? And I think we've been laughing about that ever since.
Ha, ha, ha. Well, how about this Mystic Option from a listener commenting on our website who wants us to give a shout out, please, to Robert Persig, Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, for keeping the idea of Chautauqua alive back in the 1970s, where he wrote What Is in Mind, and people who know that book, he took a trip, a motorcycle trip with his son, who was then, I think, 12. What Is in Mind is a sort of Chautauqua. That's the only name I could think for it. He wrote this whole passage, quoted this whole passage from Persig. Like the traveling tent show Chautauquas that used to move across America, this America, the one that we are now in, an old-time series of popular talks intended to edify and entertain, improve the mind, and bring culture and enlightenment to the ears and thoughts of the hearer. The Chautauquas were pushed aside by faster-paced radio, movies, and TV, and it seems to me the change was not entirely an improvement.
This leads right into the exclamation point. One of our funders said, you know, James in Normandy, who wrote the piece, originally wanted the piece to be called the Chautauqua Lectures. And one of our most devoted funders said, well, are you sure you want to call it that? I mean, people are just going to think it's just a bunch of boring lectures. Nobody's going to want to come and see it. So we decided to call it Chautauqua exclamation point.
Radio killed the Chautauqua star. Right?
Right.
What did you learn researching the production? I mean, the New York Times Review says, did you know that most pistol duels ended with no deaths, or that the East Village once had the largest German population in the world outside of Germany? What made you include those facts?
Well, I mean, we've been, every place we've done it, we've tried to adapt that history section to the specific location, and so
the show changes everywhere we go. Every venue that we do in is completely specific and tailored to that venue.
And and part of that is a specific history lecture about the venue itself and how it got to be there, and how we came to be there as an audience and a community.
So you can't get more hyperlocal than that.
Right.
The lecture about the space itself, the theater, or what might have even predated the theater on that spot.
Right. And what the you know, how the city developed, you know, to sort of create this pocket of opportunity for us to be there as artists. And
so what, we just have a minute left, but what are some of the really interesting things you've learned as you've taken this around? I mean, you do it in Lower Manhattan at one point. You were at the McGuire Theater in Minneapolis. That must be a pretty different experience.
Oh, yeah.
Totally different.
Yeah. I mean, we've really been able to mine the history of each space and include a lot of local artists. Which also teach us a lot about this space. I also learned that nobody ever heard of Chautauqua in New York, and then the rest of the country, everybody knows what Chautauqua
really,
is.
Really? That's so odd, because we have Chautauqua upstate.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
What's the name of your show again? Chappaqua?
Yeah. Oh, right. Uh-huh. Yes. Oh, Chautauqua, right. That's where Hillary Clinton lives, isn't it? So let's see. Let me tell everybody that Chautauqua is at PS 122 now through March 15th, and you can come see it as part of WNYC's own performance club this Friday, that's March 6th, with Claudia LaRocco, WNYC's performance critic and blogger. You can check out our website for details. If you want to go on a group outing with some other WNYC listeners, to see this Friday night's edition of Chautauqua.
And this Wednesday we'll be giving the Spalding Gray Award, the next Spalding Gray Award, to the Radio Hall. So come this Wednesday night. And you can follow us on Twitter, the NTUSA. And we're on Facebook, National Theater of the United States of America.
Yehuda Duenas, thanks a lot. This has been great.